Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Now let us begin the session, Rethinking Tourism Policies for the Future and for Youth. And for the opening ceremony of the 2021 Onboard General Assembly, let me introduce our moderator, Do Young Shim, a chair of UN SDGs Advocate Alumni here with us. So please welcome her with a warm round of applause. Thank you. Here to you.
Hello, everybody. Thank you for the warm introduction. Who do we have on screen now? Elena and Mr. President and Mayor of Andong and Spiros, right? Okay. I'm very honored and happy that ALC has taken up tourism industry as an issue for after COVID-19, and Amfort has agreed to do a General Assembly with ALC. First of all, I would very much like to introduce President of Amfort to say opening remarks for this session. Mr. President, it's all yours.
Thank you so much, Ambassador Dou. And good morning to all from France, where sun is shining and we are relaunching tourism from here. So I would like first to greet all the high personalities that are around us, and especially the mayor of Andong and the former minister of Greece, Elena Kontoura. And thank you as well to ALC Chosun to make us the honor to be invited to your very and so important event for all Asia. So today you have chosen to talk about tourism, and congratulations of this topic. Well, as you know, tourism is about 10% of the overall economy in the world. But at the same time, our business sector suffered a lot about the pandemic. And we have got to relaunch this new tourism. Obviously now, everyone is aware that we need to reconstruct tourism, not only about its economy, but as well with sustainable development solutions. So if I may, we will continue my speech. It was about the new solution that we are going to provide to this industry, especially on sustainable development and about security and about youth. And this is exactly the mission. It's exactly the mission of Amfort. Amfort was created 52 years ago with the UNWTO to think tank, and then to gather hotel schools, business schools or business colleges in hospitality, as well as universities providing tourism programs. Nowadays, we are recognized by United Nations Organization at the body for education and training for hospitality tourism. Hospitality, tourism, and culinary arts. So thank you again to ALC and Chosun to be able to address you 2 hours about our industry of tourism. And as the president of this international organization,
Mr. President, the translation is going on, so you don't have to stop it. You just go, you know, as you speak. They are in a good good coordination with you.
Okay, fine. So we AMFORT is gathering more than 700 members and from 77 countries. So thanks to you, we have invited and we are gathering today all these members. And after the two sessions, we will have the opportunity to have our general assembly, unfortunately, not physically in Seoul, but digitally. And I do hope that very soon all the AMFORT members will be able to come physically for business and for tourism in your great country. So I declare this session of AMFORT, the annual world session, open. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. President. Now I would like to introduce Mayor of Andong. He's going to present a special address for opening session of AMFORT General Assembly. Is Mayor Andong fine? Thank you.
예, 안녕하십니까. 대한민국 안동시장 권영세입니다.
Good afternoon and good morning. I am Kwon Young-se, Mayor of Andong City. Please accept my sincere congratulations on the AMFORT Conference, General Assembly, and the Forum, which aim to build a better future through tourism in this difficult pandemic situation. I feel honored and responsible to be here with you this year again. The outbreak has dramatically changed the lives of the whole world, and disease prevention has become a priority in our lives. In this pandemic situation, Andong City is emerging as a hub city for global vaccine production. SK Bioscience, located in Andong City, produces AstraZeneca and Novavax COVID-19 vaccines under consignment contracts, providing all these vaccines all over the world. And this company will expand the manufacturing facilities by investing about $130 million to cope with COVID-19 variants and mutations, and the new facilities will make Andong the center of global vaccine production. I sincerely hope that the vaccines produced in Andong can bring life back to normal for people around the world and helpful in revitalizing the tourism industry. With vaccination, we have been carrying out various tourism programs and policies for the resurgence of the tourism industry. First, we emphasize the conservation and the use of UNESCO World Heritage Sites as a global cultural city, preserving all the core values of the Asian culture. Andong preserves four UNESCO World Heritage Sites, which are the Haohe Folk Village, Dosan Seowon, Gyeongsan Seowon, and Gyeongjeong Temple, and one Memory of World, which is Confucian Printing Woodblocks. Also, Haohe Mask Dance Drama will be registered as a UNESCO Intangible Cultural Heritage next year. In 2022, Andong will become an extraordinary city with all three categories of World Heritage registered on the UNESCO list. So this is very significant. And we will emerge once again as a culture city. Second, Andong shares its original culture with people around the world through tourism and international meetings, creating a new future. For this, the city has been building infrastructure available for MICE meetings, such as Andong International Convention Center and the World Confucian Culture Museum. And the International Association of Educating Cities Congress and the League of Historical Cities Conference will be held at the Convention Center next year, and about 200 cities from around the world will be visiting Andong City. Third, the tourism policy of Andong aims to promote cultural exchanges and create additional value from tourism. One example of the cultural exchange is that Andong sent the A-plus apple, a brand of Andong apple, to England as a birthday present for Queen Elizabeth II and as an acknowledgement for the visits of her and her son Prince Andrew in Andong. We plan to have the MZ generation, or people in their 20s and 30s, participate in this tourism policy, and considering that they will make a future of the tourism industry, will prepare a venue for exchanges for them to reflect on their novel ideas in the tourism policy. In addition, Andong will take a leading role in establishing the network of the global culture and tourism cities after the pandemic is over. In the 20th century, international tourism significantly increased along with a boom in hosting international events after the two world wars and the Spanish flu pandemic. We also anticipate that the world tourism industry will also become active after the COVID-19 pandemic. Andong will not fall behind in this flow of time. I believe that this pandemic is an opportunity for the new leap forward, and we are being prepared for that. As a hub of Asian culture, we promise to present the most Korean city in Korea, where people from around the world can visit, and K-Tour City in Andong, which is a city leading the Korean way of tourism. Once again, congratulations on the Anpur General Assembly, and I wish you all good health and safety. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. As you all watched, Andong is a very special town. Not only they have a long history of a historical city, but they are now becoming vaccine hub. You know how vaccine is becoming important commodity for all humankind, and Andong is doing that, combining both long cultural heritage plus this hub of vaccine. So I'm very grateful that Mayor took time, and it's already second time he joined us last year, and he's joining again this year. So I'm very grateful. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. 감사합니다.
Now, thank you very
I'd
much.
Like to call upon Elena Kundura. She is a member of European Union, but she was former Minister of Tourism of Greece. Elena, please.
Dear all, dear friends, it's for me a great pleasure to be joining you today in wonderful Seoul. From Brussels for this very important and timely global initiative. I would like to congratulate the president of World Association for Hospitality and Tourism Education and Training, Philippe Francois, and all participants today for their ongoing systematic effort to support the travel and tourism sector's recovery throughout the pandemic and beyond, as we prepare for the next day. Ambassador Do, whom I happen to know since the time I was Minister of Tourism of my country, Greece, she never stops to amaze me with her leadership quality, her long time committed work in resolving social imbalances and her persistence in creating a better world for all. And also, I would like to thank the Honorable Mr. Yang Se-won, Mayor of Andong, for his valuable input that he shared with us today. It's very important that we are joining forces in the discussion to follow with the participation of top experts from global institutions, the UNWTO, the WTTC, the PATA, the World Association for Hospitality and Tourism Education and Training, the World Tourism Forum of Lucerne, Forward Keys, and of course the renewed ASEAN Leadership Conference, ministers and mayors, and distinguished members of the European Parliament. And special thanks to the Josun Elgo for their support and all media representatives that cover this event. Indeed, cooperation is the key to how we make this world a safer place for all. How we rebuild and restore trust in travel, how we can faster restart tourism and the economy, and how we will restate tourism policies, action plans, and roadmaps for tourism development for the next day. At a time when tourism and travel have experienced the worst from the pandemic, we have to work together very closely to navigate through this crisis. And we need strong political will to be translated into bold action in order to tackle the economic and social inequalities and secure prospects and equal opportunities for a sustainable future for local communities and for the youth. That is the future. Recovery and growth must be fair, inclusive, and sustainable for all. And to do this end, tourism and travel will have a very critical role over the next years. So today's event, the Global AMFOR General Assembly and Forum, and the ASEAN Leadership Conference sessions are a bright example of how we can work together and move forward together. I would like once again to congratulate the organizers and participants and to wish every success to this global initiative, which I'm sure will be very productive for all. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Elena. I think this concludes our opening session for Joseonilbo ALC, AMFOT, WTTC, European Union Parliament, and PATA, and then specially supported by City of Andong. Thank you. Hi, good evening here. Good morning there. Good afternoon, wherever you are. And I'd like to introduce, I'm really pleased to introduce Maribel Rodriguez. She's acting CEO of WTTC, World Travel and Tourism Council, headquartered in London, and I have a great honor of serving WTTC as an ambassador. She is in charge of a membership, she's in charge of a lot of external relations. So we have spent so much time already, so I'm going to hand over the microphone to you, Maribel, and continue with your session. Thank you.
Perfect. Thank you. Thank you very much, everyone. Thanks, AMFOR Forum and Asian Leadership Conference. And again, Ambassador Doug, we are very happy to have you as WTTC Ambassador, and thanks for inviting. Today, we have an amazing panelist lineup, and I want to be practical and go straight introducing themselves, give them time to explain about what this year has been for them. You know, over the five decades, the world has been, has seen a lot of dramatic social, political, and environmental, and the economy has changed. And despite of the disruption and fluctuations of tourism, the tourism was always resilient. And that's why over the last 10 years was growing at a 3.8% over the last 10 years up to 2020. Now, for the first time in history, the entire industry stopped for over a year. Millions of jobs were impacted, companies suffering, but also the current pandemic has provided us with opportunities for the governments and the private sector to both reflect on both its success and failures, allowing us to rethink tourism policies and new government systems and incorporate sustainability, capacity, and most importantly, the protection of local communities. As I said, I have an amazing and impressive lineup of speakers. I'm gonna be starting with each of them and giving them 5 minutes for them to explain how has been for them the last year, why, what they had been doing and working for. And then we will go to a discussion for the rest of the 20 minutes after the introduction. So let me first start with István Ulelyu. I don't know if I said good, sorry about that. Member of the European Parliament and Vice Chair of the Transport and Tourism Committee. Since the beginning of the health crisis, István has been vocal advocate of these sectors, fighting for their survival and for the recognition at the European level that support is crucial in this crisis time. He has been advocating for a budget for tourism so that we can give real support to the sector, not only, but in the future as well as crisis management mechanism and a long-term European strategy. He would like to create as well an European Tourism Union. So István, please, the floor is yours. You have these 5 minutes to share with us your experience. Thank you. Resumption of travel and tourism within the EU and a common safety and health protocols in place and the appropriate and inclusive financial support for the reboot of the tourism sector, particularly for the SMEs. Elena, please, the floor is yours for us to share this experience over the last past year. Thank you.
Thank you so much. The pandemic startled the whole world, every country, and left no economy intact. The reaction from global institutions, governments, and the European Union as well was proven to be slow, exactly because the virus was something new and unknown, and the crisis was unprecedented. This delayed response and the lack of coordination in adopting common measures globally had a critical role in our collective inability to avoid the second and third wave of the pandemic. The devastating impact of COVID-19 that we experienced in 2020 continues throughout this year. 2021 is another very difficult year, full of uncertainty and unpredictable factors that prevail. Today, even though we have the vaccines, which we didn't have last year, we still face a high risk due to the COVID-19 variants that pumped new setbacks and can put markets again at a stall. We all are aware of the social and psychological impact of lockdowns, the shocking surge in domestic violence, the changes in everyday life, and the enormous hit on economy with higher unemployment rates and millions of businesses in agony for the survival. These are pressing issues which we must address effectively. As vaccination campaigns progress and with new medication treatments that we hope will soon be available, we push for herd immunity, which is our ultimate goal. The European Union is the largest exporter of COVID-19 vaccines to the world and has committed to accelerating efforts to increase production capacities in order to meet global needs, and yet we need to be more ambitious through COVAX to secure that vaccines reach the global population as soon as possible. This is imperative because no one can be safe until we are all safe. The situation requires also that we better prepare to adapt to this new normality of how we move, how we travel, how we shop, interact with each other, the way we work, since teleworking has rapidly expanded, and how we do business. At the European Parliament, we have struggled since day one to battle this health crisis, but also to help our economies get back on track and protect millions of businesses and jobs that are at the verge of being lost. This is exactly why at the European Parliament we have been calling since the year for coordinated measures and protocols, to which the European Commission responded with today by launching eventually, from tomorrow actually, the EU COVID digital certificate to facilitate procedures in cross-border movement. This is basically the technical approach of a commonly accepted certificate at points of entry that verifies that a person has either been vaccinated, received a negative test result up to 17 hours before departure, or has recovered from COVID-19. Personally, as member of the European Parliament Transport and Tourism Committee, TRAM, and also member of the Tourism Task Force, I have urged since last year for common protocols and rules in place regarding opening borders and safely resuming travel and tourism activity. And I insisted on mandatory prior to departure, regardless if travelers are vaccinated or not, because as we have seen, safety is a critical factor for recovery and for restoring travelers' confidence, and it will define the future of tourism. The uncertainty that still prevails has already led to a late start for the 2021 tourism season. Major tour operators and airlines canceled their schedule for June, and most bookings will be last minute, starting by the end of July. The majority of travelers have been reluctant to book their vacation early, while several member states have encouraged their citizens to travel close to home. Yet the industry, the business, and the workforce cannot afford another year of stagnation. The Next Generation EU found European mechanism to speed up recovery until 2023 and restart the economy by providing equal opportunities to all. This is why we have urged the European Commission and the member states to secure this mechanism adequate funding, especially for micro, small, medium-sized businesses that are the backbone of the European economy. This is extremely important for the travel, tourism, and the wider hospitality chain, including restaurants, cafes, shops, the transportation sector, drivers, tour guides, and so many more businesses and professions depending on tourism that need immediate liquidity able to recover, to protect employment, and mitigate both the economy and social crisis. Too much indeed is at stake. I wanted to share with you the current situation and these very important aspects because they concern us all. Every country, every government, and every policymaker, strong political will is needed to provide all the finance tools the Next Generation EU in Europe for a viable restart for the post-pandemic era. The political choices made today define how fast the recovery will be and how we build resilience and prospects for growth for the next day. Thank you so much.
Elena, we can discuss later. A lot of questions and things are coming out to my mind now, but let me ask Isvan if he's now able to join us and give his speech, please, Isvan. Very well, thank you.
Have parallel three kinds of events in kinds of devices and three kinds of platforms. So it's terrible. But finally, I arrived. Dear colleagues, ladies and gentlemen, I would like to thank to my aliens, sorry, EC in the European Parliament, Elena Contura, today with you. She asked me to join you. You did on the reopening of tourism sector in Europe and give a global perspective as well to emphasize where I see the possible key points for the safe operation of tourism in the next decade. Of course, Elena may be mentioned perfectly very important questions. I couldn't listen. So maybe I will repeat some points. The past 2 years showed clearly to us how much vulnerable the entire sector has been. We had the Thomas Cook bankruptcy, and after that, within some months, the COVID pandemic entered into our life within a second. It was a global crisis, and nobody could measure the size and devastating impact of the COVID-19 pandemic on global tourism. Has carried on into 2021. With a new data by Tourist Barometer has shown that all world regions continued to experience large drops in tourist arrivals in the first months of the year, with an 87% fall in international tourist arrivals in January as compared to 2020, resulting in a loss of almost 4.5 trillion US dollars to the industry. This meeting is organized in the best moment to understand the possibilities of gradual opening and restart tourism industry. We had a difficult year for the entire industry. All sectors faced with serious difficulties, economic loss, and not foreseeable future. Even not so much information what will happen on the following day. The first reaction of national governments were to introduce the restrictions and border controls, having introduced the system of various periods of quarantine and focused mainly the health-related questions. But the immediate restrictions caused the complete stop of travel and the free movement of passengers and goods. There was not any coordination among the national governments. And for the first couple of months, all levels of governance had to deal with crisis management. During this period, the role of the European Parliament was crucial. Immediately, plenary debate and the cross-party negotiation started, where the Tourism Task Force with ENA, the cross-party action move in the parliament, as we could several steps together. You have to know that, for example, eight steps towards the suspension of aviation slots as the liquidity sector strategy for the entire tourism sector. During the last 1 year, the European Parliament drafted and voted for a resolution on sustainable tourism. In the implementation of the grill, we have the unique chance to rebuild the ecosystem in a sustainable manner. We need to have a European sanitary seal, a digital green pass for facilitation of travel, not only inside the EU, but from and towards third countries as well. In several countries, the level of vaccination is higher and higher with every day, and the level of herd immunity are going to be reached possible. But that, there are worrying news from not only from the United Kingdom, but also from other countries. So we should look at this, but we could open coordinate. In this process, the regular of national quarantines and more, and affordable testing procedure could be part of the solution. That is why to make affordable and accessible testing more widely available, the European Commission committed to mobilize at least 100 million euros and the emergency support instrument for the purchase of, for example, from the European Parliament to have it, to give free or very cheap tests to the people. This we had was tourism. Tourism is Polish. Europe is the number one tourist destination. Tourism as before the crisis, it is crucial that address two main challenges. First, safe addition to the health measures taken at the hotel and travel destination. This must pass the hotel or airline will not go bankrupt. And all involves trust and safety. Services available for travelers in the country or countries they are traveling in. With my colleagues, with Elena, we are working to gradually through a lot of decisions to be taken off. As I mentioned, from 1st of July, the digital green certificate going to be introduced. One of the primary aims has been to ensure that the EU COVID-19 circuit does not lead to discrimination. Legally residing countries enjoy facilities as EU citizens. Last but not least, let me mention to you this issue. Avoiding later crises and to be prepared in time, a long-term strategy is needed, the dedicated budget. We do not let tourists down. This is the moment when all the political levels recognize, for example, the importance of tourism industry. Tourism ecosystem now is inside the excuse me. Tenses, which is very important, I think. Ecosystem was included the new industrial strategy of the European Union. This is the first time in the European tourism the industry. Tourism is listed as crucial field to be invested and open for future funds of the European Union. So we put tourism back on track. And the most important thing, one year was the creation of the European Health Union project. What did it mean? More core in the member states. A similar action is needed can ensure. Do not forget to be in daily and what you have achieved in Asia with the and of course Dimitros, Elena, and as Special Ambassador of the UNWTO, I'm sure we can feel change. And that's why I would like to say my congratulations to South Korea and also to all the panelists and our followers. Thank you so much. And sorry because of the background situation.
Intervention. I know that you have to leave, so we will be then going to the questions a little bit later. But thanks, Ivan, for your comprehensive information. I hope that the audience is gonna consider and think about this to do it in Asia as well, and we can talk about that later. Now, thank you. Let me introduce our next fellow panelist, Mr. Dimitrios Papadimoulis, the Vice President of the European Parliament, Chair of the High Level Group on Gender Equality and Diversity, and he has been calling for more ambitious targets and strengthen the role of women in politics. He even presented a report on ambitious and positive targets, and it was unanimously approved. Thank you very much for joining us today. We would like to know what has been this period, this year for you, with the optics of the diversity and gender equality as well. Thank you very much. The floor is yours.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon from Brussels. I would like to thank you for the invitation. I would like also to thank Mrs. Maribel Rodriguez for the introduction, as well as all panelists and participants, and of course, the organizers. The pandemic hit us hard more than a year ago, and we are still facing its consequences worldwide. But at the same time, we have to think of the future, of our future in the post-COVID era. And our discussion today on the recovery and the future of tourism after the pandemic is extremely crucial. I come from a small country of the Eastern Mediterranean, Greece, as also Ellen Dakoura comes, who was a very effective and successful minister of tourism some years ago. And in our country, the tourism is one of its fundamental assets. Our travel and tourism industry has spent years preparing to offer safer, more accessible, and more affordable services. Unfortunately, in Greece, just like in many other countries now, the pandemic has paralyzed travel and tourism. For months, we have been unable to leave our regions, our cities, even our homes. And this happened to many other countries of the Mediterranean, like Spain or Italy. The estimated arrival of tourists fell by 77% in 2020. This crisis had led to devastating social and economic consequences, and the tourism sector has paid a huge price. The World Travel and Tourism Council estimates that up to 174 million jobs have been temporarily lost globally. It is more than clear that in order to build our future, we need to effectively tackle the pandemic. As the World Health Organization has stated multiple times, no one is safe until everyone is safe. Achieving the global immunization of our people is a requirement for our future, including the future of tourism. And this means that we have to take every step necessary in order to achieve this goal. Extraordinary circumstances call for extraordinary measures. The soonest we achieve this, the soonest we can get back on track. It is too early to say that the long-term implications of the crisis will be for tourism, but a turn to business as usual is highly unlikely. The tourism sector will be very different in the future. The longer the crisis continues, the more businesses and jobs will be lost, the greater implications for travel behavior, and the tougher it will be to rebuild the tourism economy. The pandemic has brought challenges, but also opportunities to encourage innovation, drive new business models, and move to more sustainable development models. It is an opportunity to rethink the structure of the tourism sector, take advantage of new technologies, implement green recovery strategies, and shift to policy and business practices that better balance the environmental, social, and economic impacts of tourism. The crisis is a call towards all, the public sector, the private sector, local, national, international actors and institutions. Tourism is a vital source of foreign currency and has the potential to serve as a sustainable development tool to strengthen supply chains, improve local productivity, create new jobs, and provide income for women and young people. The shift towards sustainable tourism can create social and economic value while preserving culture and natural assets. It is clear that real recovery will only be possible when international tourism returns. This requires global cooperation and evidence-based solutions so that travel restrictions can be safely lifted. Tourism is at the crossroads, and the measures put in place today will shape the tourism of tomorrow. We need to consider the longer-term implication of the crisis while capitalizing on digitalization, supporting the carbon-neutral transition, and promoting the structural transformation needed to build a stronger, more sustainable, and resilient tourism economy. Thank you very much for your attention, and I'm sure that that event and the dialogue, which will be organized not only in the event but after the event, will be very important and crucial to shape our future. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I'm afraid that still Mrs. Guevara has some connectivity problems. Let's hope that she can join, but in the meantime, I have a question for Helena. Helena, you know, the day is tomorrow. The day is tomorrow. After tomorrow, we are about to start to resume the travel within Europe. And the last day, we have been hearing different comments about new restrictions, new situations. What are your expectations? That is my first question to you. And second, Helena, when do you see this document that could be valid worldwide? This document like an example of how we can work together and how can other regions to use it to resume international travel?
Thank you so much for the questions. Actually, we think that we need guidelines for the sector recovery. This global crisis needs global coordinated response. And at the European level, I proposed the creation of a European crisis management mechanism that Istvan also mentioned before for tourism as a collective response. My proposal was adopted in two European Parliament resolutions. We need a common set of protocols in place for travel and tourism, which must be communicated widely. Travelers must know what exactly applies, and also businesses, the workforce, and destinations can be better prepared. We need adequate financial support SMEs and jobs, and also destinations whose economy depends definitely from tourism, like the GDP, for example, in Greece from tourism is 20%, and also the European GDP from tourism is about 10%. It's a big number. And it's also priority for more investments towards a greener, digital, more sustainable and responsible travel to provide the tools to businesses and workers for green and digital transition to help them diversify their offering and become more sustainable for the future. I can go on and explain also that private sector, to maybe answer to your second question, is not only governments and regions and local communities, but also how the private sector and government can work together, because no economy, no single institution, and no single business can do alone. Sustainability in tourism requires that all stakeholders work closely together. Destinations need a roadmap and a holistic destination management plan that engages the governments, local authorities, businesses, local communities, because tourism relates to almost every other policy being implemented, for example, in public infrastructure, multimodal transport, safety, health, preservation of natural environment, waste management, accessibility. The image and the reputation of each destination depends on both the public and private sector work. And one of the most important aspects is that both visitors but also residents needs are met.
Important the collaboration. We cannot work alone in silos. We need to really, more than ever, be glue and strengthen relations. Dimitrios, I would like you to touch a little bit one of our favorite themes in WTTC, which is the women initiative that we have all created. And 54% of the travel and tourism workforce are done by women. And now during the pandemic, as you said, right now, millions of jobs has been impacted, and I'm sure many of them are women. You know, women are bringing prosperity, education, families, and are pretty much. But at the same time, we have had different women leading the path, like von der Leyen, Merkel, Jacinta. Do we have now a real opportunity for women to be part of the recovery? Sorry. Yes. Yeah, thank you, Gloria. Hello. So, do we have now a real opportunity for women to be part of the recovery and stay, Dimitrios? Thank you.
I think that it's important to improve step by step the same goal, also discussing about tourism. We have to improve according to the demands of the European Union. A common European approach of the tourism and of the touristic industry. And I'm happy to say that with the hard work of Elena Kundura and other colleagues, we had achieved to have good outcome in terms of resolutions, proposals, amendments. And I would like, as a vice president of the European Parliament, to make an appeal to the Commission and to the Council, to the governments. Please hear our voice, our proposals. The European Union is a first, one or two or three steps beyond the Commission and the Council on that. It is important to hear us in order to go faster to a unification path on also on tourism, not only on equality, but also on tourism. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your intervention. And for sure, the closer we work, the faster we will all recover. And thank you very much. Now let me introduce Gloria Guevara, and thank you for joining. And sorry about the technical problem. Gloria Guevara is the Chief Special Advisor of the Ministry of Tourism of Saudi Arabia. But as you all know, the former president and CEO of WTTC and the former Minister of Tourism of Mexico, among other positions. Gloria, from your past experience, you have a global knowledge. And thanks to your leadership, for the first time ever during the pandemic, you sat the private sector and the public sector together in different occasions, like G20, task forces, for a global framework of cooperation. And now, tomorrow, this is about to happen at the European level. We are about to have the health pass. So in your current position and perspective with your new lens, how do you see Europe progressing?
Thank you, Maribel. Good afternoon, good evening or good morning, everyone. First of all, let me thank the Ambassador Doe for the invitation and my friend Elena, both of them. Thank you very much for inviting me. I'm very sorry for the technical challenges that we had for me to join the session. And I totally agree with the Vice President and the Ambassador on what he say. I think Europe has done a fantastic job with the digital green pass and the initiatives, but we need to have a harmonized approach. That is very important for the travelers so that it is clear. Last year, the biggest challenge was the lack of coordination among many countries. And I believe that Europe did a great job trying to coordinate better than other regions. We also learned, for instance, in South Korea with the success of managing the crisis, and very particularly here in Saudi Arabia, we also did a good job managing the crisis and also aligning the region, releasing recently the protocols. When you travel within the Middle East, the protocols are exactly the same. And that was an initiative that the minister here, Minister Al-Khatib, and the team took. And thanks to that initiative, we have similar protocols within the region. So I couldn't agree more. Very important to learn from the past. Very important to not make the mistakes that we made in the past. And we need to learn to coexist with this virus for the benefit of the millions of people that depend on our sector. So the coordinated approach to be able to have exactly similar or the same protocols is going to be fundamental to the recovery of our sector globally. We appreciate the leadership of Korea for having some sort of harmonization within the region. And we appreciate events like this so that we can share knowledge and best practices. And also sharing the knowledge between Europe and Asia, that is crucial for the recovery. So I totally agree that those are the right steps, but I think that we need to double the efforts in that coordination with governments and within regions like the EU, for instance. The parliament has done a great job. We need to work stronger with the commission, and the countries have to also continue with that coordination so that we can provide certainty. Because right now, the only one barrier, or the most important barrier for the travelers, is not the pandemic, is the uncertainty, the lack of clear protocols, the lack of clear understanding what is needed when you travel. And despite the success and great effort from many countries on the vaccination rollout, we cannot maximize the benefits if we don't work together. So my comments are basically that it's crucial to have that coordination, and the leadership in Europe is fundamental. And of course, the leadership in Korea and what we're doing here in Saudi Arabia as well within the region, and last year with the G20.
Thank you. And do you think that the restart of the receiving the international travel is only about opening borders? Are there any other way of getting there? Because we are seeing so many difficulties nowadays to make sure that the different countries are coordinated. What should be some of the solutions to open that?
I think some countries did a fantastic job managing the crisis. However, they didn't plan for the reopening. And when you open borders, you need to coordinate with other countries because travel connects all of us. And when you decide to open without a coordinated approach, perhaps other markets disagree with the approach, and it's going to be very hard to have the inbound travelers. So opening borders is important, but I would say it's more important to have this coordinated approach, because we can announce that we're open, but if someone is saying that their travelers are not able to travel to your country, then it's going to create more confusion and complications. So to me, Maribel, we need both. The protocols are very important, and to have a clear mobility protocol is fundamental, but also the coordination of the reopening the borders is very important.
Thank you. Helena, as the travel and tourism industry faced one of the greatest threats that we have ever experienced, and even if we are very resilient and responsible, any advice on how we can secure or making sure that both public and private sector truly work together for the same goal?
Actually, as I mentioned before, we have to work together, the private and the public sector. And I mentioned why, because no economy, no single institution, and no single business can do it alone. And we have to see the future of tourism, because with no doubt, sustainable tourism is the only way for the future. We need to keep working together for exchanging best practices, introducing more innovative measures. We have to work together, the public and the private sector, because we need to reduce the climate and environmental footprint of the sector, to develop more sustainable forms of tourism and thematic tourism, diversity, the offer, diversify the offer, developing new digital services and transactional projects for tourism. We have to support and tourism can be the accelerator for recovery and for the growth, because you know, it should be placed high in the agenda of each government and policy maker and must be supported today so that it can mobilize again benefits for all in the future. So definitely we have to work together, and we have to exchange also best practices, and we have to work not only in each country nationally, but all the countries, especially for Europe, all together to have a European strategy. And as I told you before, in the European Parliament, we managed to have this European strategy for tourism, and actually to show how important tourism is and how actually accelerates the growth in other sectors as well. So we need to work together, definitely.
Thank you, Elena. Thank you, Lorena. Thank you, Dimitris. I'm going to give the word to Ambassador Do because he wanted to wrap up the session and say some words. So, Ambassador Do, please, the floor is yours.
To see all of you, although we did have some technical difficulties, but Korea is very advanced technically, but sometimes it's hard to connect all different zones of the world. But however, I'm very glad that we were able to do WTTC and European Union Parliament together. And I think that's a true example of how public and private sector can work together. Thank you so much.
Yes, I can.
Okay. It seems to me that Dr. Rifai is still not connected. But why don't you start? I will just introduce you and you start the session. How is that? And then Dr. Rifai will join at his time. Okay? Oh, is that all right?
That's okay. Right. Yep. Yes, yeah.
Good evening, good morning, good afternoon, wherever we are, wherever you are. It's great to see all of you again. This is the last session of Asian Leadership Conference concerning tourism. How we deal with the tourism industry after 2021, especially after pandemic, coronavirus pandemic issue is under control, hopefully. And so it's my great pleasure to introduce Mario Hardy, who is going to be the moderator of your session. And Mario Hardy, until last month, he was CEO of PATA, Asia Pacific Travel Association, and now he's going to moderate your session. Here's Mario. Mario, it's all yours. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ambassador Do. Great pleasure to be here with you all today. And I'm very pleased to have a great panelist with us today, Olivier Ponti, which will do a short presentation to us in a few minutes. His Excellency Francesco Frangelli, the former Secretary General of UNWTO and the Chairman of ANFORF today. Dr. Rifai hopefully will be joining us in a few minutes, also former Secretary General of UNWTO. Mike Tsa, our Honorable Lazar Tegura, great to see you today. Martin Barth from the World Travel Tourism Forum, Lucerne, and of course, Philippe Francois, who is the president of ANFORF. So thank you all for joining me today. And first, I'd like to introduce Olivier Ponti from Forward Keys, who will actually share with us a short presentation on the current state of the industry for the past few months, but most importantly, what does it look like moving forward in terms of the international travel scene. And Olivier and I had the pleasure of working together over the last several months and years to collaborations between PATA and Forward Keys. And it's always a great pleasure to have you on my panel. So Olivier, over to you.
Thank you very much for the introduction, Mario. Could I ask the technical team to put my presentation on screen, please? Very good, thank you. So hi, everybody. I'm Olivier Ponti. I'm VP for Insights at Forward Keys. Thank you very much for inviting us to this grand stage today so that we can share the latest insights regarding travel in the Asia-Pacific region. Before I start, next slide, please. Yes, just a few words about the kind of data we use and what we do. Forward Keys is a travel analytics company. We're specialized in the air travel market. On the supply side, we know when and where airlines intend to fly and how many seats they schedule. And on the demand side, we monitor searches performed before a trip, the bookings made, and tickets issued, all of this in near real time. Our data comes from trusted sources such as IATA, ARC, the International GDSs Network, and other partners like OAG and Kiwi.com. So I could talk about our algorithms for hours, but we only have 20 minutes. And all you need to know is that for the past 11 years, we've been using big data to help governments and travel businesses across the world to understand current and future travel trends. Next slide, please. Today, we'll begin with a global overview of the current international travel. We'll see how the Asia-Pacific fits in this big picture, and we'll zoom in on specific regions and destinations, including our host nation, South Korea. We'll take a look at the various initiatives that have been implemented to kickstart travel recovery and discuss what's worked so far and what hasn't. And finally, I'll share our views about the future in terms of months and years. Next slide. So let's start with a global overview. Next slide, please. When looking at international arrivals from January to mid-June, it's easy to get depressed. We're still far away from pre-pandemic levels and all regions remain squarely in the red. But it doesn't mean that all the destinations are at the same stage of recovery. Recovery is underway in certain parts of the Americas and Africa and the Middle East, two regions showing much better results than the world average. The problem is that Asia is lagging, and this gap between Asia and the rest of the world is widening. Next slide. Now, the different recovery pace becomes clearer when looking at the evolution of international arrivals in the last 30 days with the months before. We can see it in the Americas, Africa, and the Middle East. Europe is also catching up thanks to the easing of travel restrictions, while the Asia-Pacific region is slowing down. Next slide. Looking at the top 10 most resilient global destinations year to date, we can see that only one is located in Asia, Malé in the Maldives, -45% on 2019 levels. Most places offering sun and sea, such as the Caribbean, are getting increasingly closer to pre-pandemic level. In the case of San Juan in Puerto Rico, we can even see growth compared with 2019. Next. If we change the approach and instead of looking at past arrivals, start looking at the evolution of tickets issued for an international trip anytime in the future, we see that the Asia-Pacific shows no sign of recovery for international travel, while the Caribbean is close to pre-pandemic levels, thanks to the reactivation of the US outbound market. Europe, in light blue, is widening the gap with Asia since late March, as vaccination is reviving international travel. Next. So far, we've talked about the Asia-Pacific as a single entity, but it's worth taking a closer look at subregions and destinations to see differences emerging. Next. One characteristic of the region is that it's been very risk-averse, putting strict border restrictions in place to ensure the safety of its citizens. Northeast Asia, China, and Japan are closed off to most travelers, while arriving passengers in South Korea must undergo a mandatory quarantine. Southeast Asia, which had been less affected by the pandemic, has now implemented new restrictions due to the recent rise in COVID cases. In Oceania, Australia and New Zealand have been closed to business for more than 1 year, so it's no wonder international travel has remained almost non-existent since the beginning of the year. The exception is South Asia, which was less affected thanks to international arrivals to Afghanistan, Pakistan, Bangladesh, and Iran. And here we're talking about VFR travel mostly. The only destination basking in new business opportunities has been the Maldives, profiting from leisure travel. In South Asia, we're seeing the figures dip again, -18% in the last month due to the recent outbreak in India. Travel restrictions and the evolution of the pandemic in the region are making recovery very challenging. Next. With the pandemic, all traditional hubs in Asia have been severely hit, but some have lost more than others. For example, Hong Kong, which was the leading hub before the pandemic. Hong Kong has lost a staggering 16 market share points due to the strict restrictions and the inability to provide transit to its largest market, mainland China. Singapore is now in the top position with 21% of international connecting traffic. Singapore has strengthened its position as a major hub to connect the so-called kangaroo route between Australia and the UK. Seoul ranked second, gained 11% market share points against other Asian hubs, mostly to connect traffic between mainland China and the US, as the number of direct flights is limited. Tokyo Narita and Bangkok jumped to the third and fourth positions, increasing market shares by 8% respectively. Next. Luckily, not all is lost for travel professionals in Asia, provided they can cater for their domestic markets. As we can see on this map, domestic travel recovered more than 50% in China, South Korea, Vietnam, Bangladesh, and Afghanistan. Next. Let's take a closer look at three of these countries. Domestic travel in South Korea, in green on this chart, has been recovering gradually and should be back to pre-pandemic levels around mid-July, according to all tickets issued as of mid-June. Here's a fun fact. South Korea has a relatively small domestic market, but it's dominated by one route linking Seoul and Jeju Island, which accounts for more than 70% of the domestic market. This is the busiest route in the world. Let's examine Vietnam now. There was a sudden surge in domestic travel over the holidays in late April, but shortly after, demand collapsed due to the rise of COVID cases. This shows just how volatile the current situation is. Domestic recovery in China has a huge economic impact, even the volumes of domestic passengers. Our figures show that China domestic travel had fully recovered last October, but stalled in January due to the resurgence of locally transmitted cases. As the situation has been contained, recovery picked up and even surpassed 2019 levels by 12% in May. Chinese domestic travel benefits from the dual circulation strategy put in place by the government to stimulate domestic demand with a series of preferential policies. We expect this market to remain strong, but bookings for summer travel is behind. Why? Because Chinese travelers are booking later than ever. At the moment, most bookings are made under 4 days before departure. Next slide. This trend towards last-minute bookings is exactly what we can see on this chart. People tend to book more last minute because of the uncertainty of the COVID era, but also because more flexible ticket cancellation policies have made them more confident to book this way. The question is whether this behavior is here to stay. Next. Let's get back to South Korea. Three gateways in South Korea have increased in traveler appeal: Seoul, Busan, and Jeju. Domestic travel was only lower by 20% to Seoul, 30% to Jeju, and 50% to Busan when compared with 2019. Without surprise, Jeju Island is the top destination for South Korean travelers this year. Next. Looking at the profile of these travelers to Jeju Island, we can see that they were more likely to be honeymooners or families than pre-pandemic. Group travel has suffered the most, with a market share down by 12 points. Next. We've already mentioned that Seoul-Jeju was the busiest flight route in the world, so it's interesting to see how airfares are evolving on this route. Our data shows that airlines first slashed fares to stimulate demand when the COVID cases hit a record in South Korea last spring. And when the situation was contained and people started to travel again, airfares began rising, especially during the festive seasons, the Mid-Autumn Festival last October and the Lunar New Year in February. In times of COVID, the law of supply and demand remains valid. When demand picks up, airfares increase too. Next. So in the next part of this presentation, I'd like to talk about collaboration strategies as they can help accelerate recovery in the Asia Pacific. Next. Let's start with the landmark aviation agreement recently concluded between the EU and Asia. This is the first block-to-block air transport agreement in the world, and it should help rebuild air connectivity between regions. In a nutshell, under this agreement, airlines of the combined 37 member countries can fly any number of flight services between countries. This could dramatically change the trend we've seen over the last decade. Since 2010, the volume of direct seats between ASEAN and the EU has remained stable, while Gulf hub carriers kept developing new capacities to connect ASEAN and the EU via their hubs. Under the new form of open skies agreements, we expect to see ASEAN and EU airlines become more competitive to facilitate people and business exchange between these regions. Next. Travel bubbles between two destinations represent another form of collaboration. Let's take a look at two of these in Oceania: Australia, New Zealand, and New Zealand and the Cook Islands. The first conclusion we can draw from these experiences is that travel bubbles can be a powerful tool to reactivate travel. We can see a clear increase in tickets after the first announcement of these two travel bubbles. Tickets from Australia to New Zealand after the announcement of the travel bubble reached 54% of 2019 levels. In the case of the New Zealand and the Cook Islands corridor, it was even more successful, as travel from New Zealand to the Cook Islands surpassed 2019 levels at the beginning of May. Next. Just announcing an upcoming travel bubble has a positive impact on bookings. The failed bubble between Singapore and Hong Kong is a good example of this. It was initially set to begin last November, but has been postponed twice due to a spike in cases. Each time, we saw a spike in bookings following announcements, and then a wave of cancellations when the bubble burst. The plan will be reviewed in early July. At this stage, it's difficult to be sure that people will feel confident to book again, but we believe that the previous experience has shown that there was pent-up demand and that it did translate to bookings when allowed. Next. Oh, I see there's a, could you please go back to the previous slide? That's the Palau Taiwan bubble, sorry. So let's talk about the Taiwan Palau bubble. That's a particularly interesting bubble because it shows the limits of an air corridor and stresses how important it is to also consider other aspects of travel restrictions, such as quarantines. Now, the travel bubble between Palau and Taiwan opened on April 1st. We saw a spike in bookings when the bubble was announced at the end of March, a pattern familiar by now, and issued tickets surged to almost 50% of the pre-pandemic level. The problem is that the initial excitement did not last. After just a few weeks, the volume of tickets collapsed, probably due to the high prices and strict rules. To take a holiday in Palau, tourists from Taiwan had to make several health declarations, pay for COVID tests, and take 14 days of self-help management upon return. Eventually, a new COVID outbreak in Taiwan led to the suspension of this fragile bubble after only 6 weeks. Next. So let's leave travel bubbles behind, and we'll now take a look at other initiatives taken by destinations to kickstart recovery. Next. And I'd like to start with the Maldives, which has been one of the most resilient destinations worldwide, as I mentioned earlier. Now, year to date, international travel to the Maldives has reached 55% of 2019 levels. This is largely due to smart tactical marketing campaigns in two key markets, Russia and the UAE. The Maldives identified the potential of these markets at an early stage and swiftly adapted their communication strategy. Visit Maldives ran marketing campaigns via digital platforms and Russian TV and successfully attracted more tourists from Russia and the UAE during busy travel periods around Easter and Ramadan. As we can see on this chart, Russia and the UAE have not only recovered their 2019 level, they have surpassed them by far. And this shows that DMOs can make a difference. Next. A closer look at the type of tickets sold reveals a shift in preference toward premium classes. The share of travelers flying in premium classes is 22% in the pandemic era, increasing from 15% pre-pandemic. In other words, the Maldives have not only managed to get international travel back to the destination, but they also succeeded in attracting visitors with the highest economic impact. Next. Thailand is also making great efforts in preparations to reopen its tourism sector. On the 1st of April, Thailand reopened to fully vaccinated travelers, but quarantine was required. There is so no booking activity at this stage. Things get more interesting during phase 2 and 3. In July, Phuket's sandbox plan will allow travelers to enter Phuket without quarantine, that's phase 2, and by mid-October, the country will fully reopen phase 3. What we can see already is a gradual increase in bookings rather than a surge in arrivals just after the island reopens. Booking volumes in Q3 are still limited due to the wet monsoon, and probably also because although vaccinated tourists can enter Phuket, they must stay for 14 nights before they can visit other destinations in Thailand. The most interesting part is that people have started booking for Q4. As of mid-June, forward tickets for travel to Thailand in Q4 reached 9% of tickets issued at the same time in 2019. That may seem little, but it's definitely going in the right direction. Next. Regarding Phuket, it's also interesting to note that Europe currently represents 90% of international bookings to the destination in Q4. That's a major shift compared to pre-COVID. It's also worth noting that for Q3, Phuket is attracting interest from Israel, a country where the large majority of the population is vaccinated. In 2019, Israel accounted for 1% of international arrivals to Phuket. It's now 31%, and Israel seems set to become the top source market. Next. When looking at Phuket, we couldn't help but draw a parallel with the situation in Bali. Phuket's sandbox and Bali's green zones have a relatively similar approach. Both destinations heavily bet on vaccination to relaunch tourism. So far, all we can say is that there's a short-term impact, but that it is very limited. As we can see on this chart, there's an uptick in international bookings to both destinations following the announcements, but volumes have only reached around 2% of the pre-pandemic levels for now. I think we need to wait a bit more time to see if this model pays off. Next. Let's now move to Macau, where the recovery process is well underway. Tickets have been trending upwards since Macau reopened to mainland China at the end of February. In the second week of June, issued tickets for travel from mainland China to Macau reached 63% of 2019 levels. What's particularly interesting about Macau is that it shows how tourism operators, organizations, and DMOs can work collectively and use digital excellence to make trips safer and easier for travelers in the post-pandemic era. The Macau government cooperated with a lifestyle service review and reservation app in mainland China to issue subsidies to merchants. In combination with new consumption habits, local merchants have provided contactless services such as real-time reservations, online reservations, and group purchasing, which have made it easier to plan a trip before arriving. Apart from a series of recovery plans launched by the government, Macau's recovery has also benefited from effective epidemic prevention and control, quarantine exemptions, and promotional campaign. Think live broadcasts, roadshows, and online events, which leverage the wide influence of varying key opinion leaders. The way travelers make decisions have changed, and I believe the tourism recovery model tested by Macau with its strong emphasis on digitalization is a reference to keep in mind when thinking of travel post-COVID. Next. The other thing worth noting about Macau is that it benefits from longer stays, which means that travelers are likely to do more at the destination and spend more. The reason behind this is that before the pandemic, Macau was usually combined with Hong Kong. People used to visit both destinations, say in a five-day holiday, but now, due to safety concerns and travel restrictions, people tend to explore just a single destination at a slower pace. This is a behavior we're noticing in different parts of the world, and this creates new opportunities. Next. One quick word about learnings from other parts of the world. From Europe, I can see two key takeaways. First, that vaccination and negative PCR tests boost the recovery of international travel. I'm not saying it is the solution to all the problems of the travel industry, but it's part of the solution. And second, it's clear that the destinations doing much better than average, such as Greece, Croatia, and Spain, are the ones which have been the most proactive in their communication regarding the rules of the game in advance of the summer season. As a destination, the earlier you communicate on the lifting of travel restrictions, the better, because you give travelers the possibility to plan. Next. While Europe is welcoming vaccinated travelers, the US is giving vaccines to travelers. More states in the US are not requiring residence proof for people who want to get their shot, and this drives international tourism to the US. While people from Latin America have been doing this for a while now, Taiwan is a more recent newcomer. We're also seeing a longer length of stay for this type of travel, as people are staying long enough to get both shots of vaccine. Next. Now let's finish this presentation with a short-term and a long-term outlook for the Asia Pacific. Next. Looking at current bookings for Q3 and Q4, I'm afraid international travel in the Asia Pacific is still on hold. There are some success stories, however. The Maldives should have recovered to around 60% of 2019 volumes. This short-term outlook could improve quickly, depending on upcoming travel bubbles and vaccination rollouts. Next. Back to the global picture, on this heat map, we can see the booking situation for the summer based on current tickets benchmarked with the pre-pandemic situation. We can see that some destinations in green will have almost fully recovered, especially in the Caribbean. There's also good resilience in some African destinations supported by VFR travel. As for the southern part of Europe, it's picking up. What this means is that the trend we've mentioned at the beginning, the widening of the gap between the Asia Pacific and the rest of the world, should continue. Next. As future developments in the travel sector are very volatile and unpredictable, airlines are constantly adjusting their capacity. We can see that airlines have planned more seats in case there's an opportunity in the market, but unfortunately, international capacity for all regions is going down from month to month. In line with the expectations on summer arrivals, Americas and Europe are currently standing the best with 59% of seats of summer 2019. Next. After being hit very hard in 2020, we can already see the travel sector picking up. Based on our forecasts, from 2024 onwards, international travel should have more stable volumes, and it should get back to 2019 levels by 2026 in all regions of the world. APAC was the most hit region, and based on our forecast, it will be the last one to recover. But once international travel is resumed and allowed in the region, we're expecting a quick turnaround as the demand is evident. Next. Taking a closer look at some key Asian destinations, we can see that China had the steepest decrease in international arrivals, in 2020. But by 2030, we expect it to surpass 2019 levels by 34%. The biggest increase compared with 2019 levels, plus 57%, is expected in Thailand. The other destinations are seeing a similar trend with increases by 30 to 45%. We've calculated the compound annual growth rate for the period from 2020 to 2030. And as we can see, most destinations have a growth rate of around 25%. Next. So to conclude, here are four key takeaways to consider. First, with more countries easing their restrictions on entry, international travel has started to recover. However, as we've seen, it's not symmetrical across the globe and Asia is lagging. There's travel demand in Asia, but there are very few international travel options, and this makes domestic travel pivotal. Third, we're starting to see several new normals, such as shorter lead times, longer stays, and stronger reactivation among the affluent traveler profile. And that is something that destinations could benefit from if they take the right steps. Fourth, destinations need to be innovative and proactive. We've seen through the examples of Greece and the Maldives how early communication and different incentives to interest travelers lead to stronger tourism reactivation. And finally, having the right data can help tourism ministers and boards act quickly on key business decisions as they arise. The next few years will continue to be bumpy, but let's make it less foggy. Next slide. So we've arrived at the end of this presentation. I thank you for your time and hand the microphone over to Mario for the panel discussion. Thank you. Back to you, Mario.
Well, since Mario is, you know, we can have him on screen now, let me just continue with my moderating, try to moderate until Mario shows up again. First of all, Dr. Frangeli, do you hear me, Mr. Frangeli? It's great to see you again.
Yes, I can.
Would you please...
Welcome, Taleb, and goodbye, Mario.
Is Dr. Taleb Rifai is on too? He's back. He's back.
Yeah.
Okay. Good. Dr. Frangeli, we just heard the very comprehensive presentation by Mr. Ponti. Please make some comments on his presentation, or if there's question, please.
First of all, just to start, I would like to congratulate Lise Ortega for appointment as head of PATA. be difficult to be the successor of Mario Hardy, but I'm sure you will be fantastic. I've heard with a greater interest the presentation from Olivier Ponti. I would like to add a few figures taken from the last issue of the UNWTO barometer. They are slightly different because not only about air transport, but all the means of transportation. International arrivals dropped by 73% in 2020 compared to 2019. They are down to 400 million, which means that they are under their 1990 level. Our industry has lost 1 billion arrivals and the benefits of 30 years of growth. The drop in terms of receipts in foreign currencies, is almost of the same magnitude, minus 64%. Since the epidemic started producing its effect in the major economies from the second quarter of 2020, it's not excluded, even without a possible rebound of the circulation of the virus in the last quarter of the year, that 2020 results appear as bad as those of last year, even maybe worse. For the first quarter of 2021, arrivals are down by 83% compared to the same period of 2020. Let me just say, however, that this figure may be a little bit misleading, since they refer exclusively to international travel. And we know that on the major markets, a phenomenon of substitution took place because of sanitary constraints and the obstacles to border crossing. Domestic trips replaced international ones. This could be noted in Northern America, Western Europe, and above all in China, where domestic tourism is back to tourism. If Mrs. Yangshim, if I have some time, I would like to make a comparison between this crisis and the one we experimented, the subprime crisis of 2008-2009, but you will tell me if it's appropriate now or later. No reaction?
Is Mario still not here yet? Yes? No?
Okay.
All right, Dr. Rifai, how are you? Great to see you, Dr. Rifai. Great. We just heard, did you hear the presentation of Mr. Ponti?
Yes.
Please
yes,
make some comments.
Yes, I did.
See, I'm not supposed to moderate the session, but Mario is gone, so
thank
I have
you.
To do
there
this.
Is a major problem in the presentation.
Okay.
It misses the point here. The point, you do a great job. I know, Mario, no problem. I had a few minutes ago. Okay. Oliver, I think the problem is with governments. The issue is in the hands of governments now. Governments are issuing all the regulations and rules. As long as the government don't cooperate with each other, we'll see no recovery. You're right, it will be 25, 26 maybe, because we're leaving everything on its own. The trick is not to do a perfect on your own as a country. The trick is to coordinate with your neighbors first, make a regional cooperation, and then international, because recovery of tourism is not going to happen. There are no two opposite destinations that are interacting with each other. Look at the European Union, for example. You have a country that's insisting on quarantine, next to it, a country that is issuing a passport, a vaccination passport. Next to it, a country that says 72 hours of vaccine of testing, and testing upon arrival is enough. I think that's the correct thing to do. But whatever you agree on, all governments must agree on something. The multilateral system that we're used to is broken down. Politically, it's broken down. We don't have a United States of America. We have a divided States of America. Every state is acting on its own. Every city is acting on its own. I'm sorry to say this. It's in the hands of governments now, not the private sector. The private sector is reacting to this, unfortunately. unless governments start working together, we'll not see an end to this. This is my point of view. Thank you, Madam Doe.
Thank you, Dr. Rifai. Mr. Ponti, I will go ahead ask further intervention, and then you probably would like to answer some of those the comments and answer. Would that be okay, Mr. Ponti?
Perfectly fine.
Okay, very good. I'm going to ask then new CEO of PATA. First of all, on behalf of all of us, we were friends with Dr. Frangelli, Dr. Rifai, Mr. Martin Barth, and then, of course, Philippe Francois. We are all good friends, and we really like to congratulate you for being elected as new CEO of PATA. And I know it's a hard way to follow because Mario, although he disappeared, he has been a fantastic representative of PATA. So congratulations. And then you heard Mr. Ponti's the presentation. Please make some comments about his, and if you have any question, please ask some questions about Mr. Ponti's presentation. No. Okay, then Martin Barth, do you hear me?
You need to unmute yourself.
Mr. Barth, do you hear me?
I do hear you, Ambassador. Okay. Thank you very much for having me today.
Okay, thank you very much for coming. You're coming from Lausanne, right now?
From Lucerne, in the center of Switzerland.
Okay, very good. Please make some comments about Mr. Ponti's presentation. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And I think it, thanks to Olivier about his presentation. I think it's very important that our industry, and he mentioned that many times, have the relevant, the right data. We are often, first of all, don't have the data. And even if we have them, we don't take the right decisions based on this data. And I think we need more people like him who can not only show the relevant data, but explain the destinations or the countries, what to do, what's based on these facts and figures to do. And because tourism is often, I mean, there are all these data, but I often experience that we don't need these data for our decisions. Second point I would like to make is, and I'm very much in line with what he said, I think that in a way we, and that's what my lessons learned is of what he told us or presented us, is in a way we have to rethink the travel, tourism, hospitality industry, rethink what was here before. And I think we have, and he mentioned that, we have to come up with new, with more innovative, I would add, more sustainable business models, which involves, as Talib Rifai said, all the relevant stakeholders. It has to be a truly a cooperation. And when I can add a cooperation, not only the different stakeholders, but we also have to include the citizens. We shouldn't forget the people who live in a destination, because at the end, they are the ones who are hosting us as tourists, and they should be part of the development. I can experience that here in Switzerland, in Lucerne especially, that we really involve them. Tonight we have a workshop here in Lucerne where the citizens are very much part of. I think that is a very important issue I would like to mention. And let me just make a last point. I think whatever we do and wherever we go with the recovery, we should always think about the nature. I mean, at the end, we are selling nature, we are selling experiences. So let's take care about nature and the biodiversity, because that's, I think, the USP we are selling to people, to tourists around the world. Thank you very much.
Thank you. All right, then I'm going to leave Mr. Philippe Francois as the last speaker, because I'd like you to make final comments. So meanwhile, I'm going to go back to Mr. Ponti. Please make some comments and answers to the comments delivered by Dr. Frangelli and Dr. Rifai and Martin Barth.
Thank you so much, Ambassador Do. But first of all, I think that Francesco Frangiali didn't end up his discussion, and he had some other points, I think, to mention. Please, Francesco, I give the floor to you, and I will come back on the microphone.
Okay. Mr. Ponti.
Frangiali.
Is to compare this crisis to the last one and the biggest one we have until now experimented in the history of world tourism, which is the subprime crisis of 2008-2009. This one is much worse. In 2010, the recovery came, and in 2010, the arrivals were already higher than the one of 2008. It's absolutely clear that the two crises are of a different nature. The order of factors is not the same. The subprime crisis was originally financial, then economic, then social, with the boom of unemployment. The COVID crisis is completely different. First of all, sanitary, then social and even cultural by some aspect, then economic, and finally financial, both for the private sector and for the government because of the recovery package. In 2009, many people stopped traveling because they were preoccupied with their job or their salary. In 2021, almost everyone stopped traveling for the same reasons, but moreover, because of the obstacles to travel are too high. Transportation systems at a standstill. Crossing the borders has become quite impossible. And because people are feeling at risk for their life or for their health. So we are entering with this crisis a new world in the shocks which has affected tourism in the modern history.
Thank you, Dr. Frangeli. Dr. Rifai, do you have something to add on what Dr. Frangeli said?
I'm insisting that it's the problem is with the multilateral system. I'm insisting the problem is with the multilateral system. Yes. I think the problem is still with the multilateral system, Oliver. I think that the world is not working together. Not the EU, not the UN. We don't hear any voices of them coordinating the actions because it's in the hands of governments now. Governments are taking the decisions and the private sector is reacting only to that. The world will never recover unless the whole world is vaccinated. 70% of the world population must be vaccinated. Can't turn this into a game of those that have it and those that don't have it. And it will take 5 years for the world to be vaccinated at this rate. So, it's not important now how good every country is doing on its own. World tourism will not recover until the world leaders sit down together and are told you're not going to leave this room until you agree on something. That's the role of the UN now. The UN is not working all together. The material system needs to rebuild from bottom up, brick by brick again. It's not working like that. I understand now each government is feeling its own responsibility because it's a matter of life and death. But they have to coordinate with each other. Without coordination, without cooperation between governments, it will never work. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Rifai. I'm going to ask Mr. Ponti to react to you. We've heard from Mr. Frangeli and Dr. Rifai and Mr. Barth. Would you please react to their comments, Mr. Ponti?
I'd be happy to react to these comments, but I think Mr. Francois was just about to make comments himself, and I'd like to give him the opportunity to speak.
Oh, okay, I was saving you, Mr. Francois, at the last speaker. All right.
Yeah, I was supposed to conclude, but still. Okay. Maybe Lady Odguera, can you hear us? And you didn't have the microphone up to now, so maybe you have comments. And we are very, very interesting to hear your comments, Liz. No. Microphone is still not working. Okay, so please, Olivia, thank you for some comments, and then I will say a few words as a conclusion as our president of Frankfurt. Thank you, Olivia.
Okay, fantastic. All right. So thank you all for your feedback. I think we've covered a lot of ground in this Q&A in this panel discussion. Mr. Frangeli, you've stressed the fact that we were really going through a crisis and that we've entered a new world in this crisis. And I think we all need to be aware that this new world, the face it will have, will very much depend on the decisions that we make now to make it better than what we had in the past. And that starts with international collaboration. We've seen the shortcoming of the current approach. Mr. Rifai has stressed this very, very powerfully. I think this is absolutely key indeed to relaunch the travel sector. Without international collaboration, we will not get anywhere. In any case, we will never truly recover. But building a better world post-COVID, when looking at our specific sector, I also think that means investing heavily in education, making sure that at all levels within the travel industry, people are ready, organizations are ready to make use of data, which I believe is the key asset that we have in the current world we live in that we didn't have when we had to face previous crises. There's more data than ever. There's more opportunities to seize based on this data than ever, but we need to have people that are properly equipped to make use of this data and make data-based decisions, be smarter in their approach. And I believe that universities and education educational organization at large have a key role to play. And the last thing I'd like to mention is that building a better tomorrow, it's definitely means also taking the locals into account when building the version 2, let's say, of their tourism destinations. Sustainability is key, and we shouldn't be misguided in trying to recover as fast as possible if it's to make the same mistakes as the mistakes that we've made in the past. We should build better, and building better means involving the local citizens much more than what has been done in the past, and taking the environment into account.
Thank you, Mr. Ponti. I really do appreciate your very comprehensive presentation of situation in Asia, especially in Asia, Korea, China, Japan, and New Zealand, Asia Pacific area. And it was very, very helpful. So before I hand over this final saying to Mr. Philippe Francois, President of Amfort, who has been working, this is the second year for Amfort get engaged with the Asian Leadership Conference and Joseon Ilbo for this. And before I say goodbye to everybody, I really want to thank Joseon Ilbo ALC taking tourism, travel industry serious enough to segment this kind of time for us. And I truly appreciate Dr. Frangeli, Dr. Rifai, Martin Both, all the way from Lausanne, and you, CEO Pata. I'm sorry your mic didn't work, but I'm so glad you're with us. So, final speech goes to Mr. Philippe Francois. You have 4 minutes to talk. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Ambassador Du. Thank you so much, and thank you to all the team of ALC and Chosen. Yes, we had some technical problems, but at the end, everything worked out. And we appreciated, especially from Amfort, we appreciated the high level of considerations of all our experts. Thank you, Olivier. Thank you, Tele, Francesco, Martin. And next time, please, Liz, be together with the microphone. We're really hungry to hear you. And please, we will have other occasions to talk together, and for you, Angela, to be part of our big network of we were talking about the recovery, we're talking about rebuilding cooperation, Olivier. So yes, it's not perhaps just a recovery period, it's perhaps what I would call a recovery society. We are going to change a lot of things in our lives, not only for traveling, but as well for training and education. So we have, yes, to rebuild our cooperation all over the world. And this is exactly, as president of AMFERT, what I'm trying to do every day, is to gather people all over the world in one sense. The sense is, and the value at the same time, is human resources development, training, and education within a sustainable development solution atmosphere. So this, I would like at the end of this first part of the meeting, because as you know, there will be a second part of the meeting, as far as AMFERT are concerned, with our General Assembly, as our annual official General Assembly, just at 3 o'clock, and but I would like to be a little bit optimistic with you, like you have been during your considerations. And we think, we, especially because we are perhaps experts and we have got the microphone, I'd like to focus all our talks, our speeches, to restore confidence, and especially in academic strength. From your words, Olivier, you are trying to restore confidence in the market. You're trying to make confidence in the economy. But I would like, as AMFERT president, to add, you know, to restore confidence in the youth, in training and education. So obviously, as I said, we are going to have to reconsider the overall academic systems, perhaps as well the academic or pedagogic rhythm. The way we are nowadays training and educate our youth. For example, 2 years ago, it was unbelievable to only to imagine to have, you know, classes from one country to another with webinars. So obviously nowadays it's, yeah, it makes sense, and everybody understood, and everybody is very clever to operate this kind of operation with Bebida, with Zoom, Teams, and so on. So we need to restore the confidence in the youth and in the academic system. For example, to the students, you know, it has been a very hard year, perhaps two very hard years before, and we need now, thank you for the associations, thank you for all the hotel hospitality groups, thank you for all destination resort managers to think about how to have this new confidence with the youth. Thank you to open your door to employment. Nowadays in France, we are a very high lack of employees in the hospitality. So we are closing restaurants because we have no chefs, no head waiters. So thank you to all of you. Thank you to all you people in Korea, in Asia, to reconsider this. We need to open our arms to the youngest generation. And thank you as well for all the business colleges, universities, and hotel schools, especially those who are members of AMFERT, to cooperate worldwide. Because with cooperation, we will be stronger, and we will be able to develop new programs, to have more students, and from one country to another country, to create, maybe, sorry perhaps to say that, but not only cooperation, not only a better economy, but perhaps as well peace around the world. I truly believe that we are in a sector when we can participate in peace creation, especially when we deal with training and education. So thank you. I invite all of you to come with us with AMFERT, and I truly, sincerely think that we are in the good track in order not only to develop our economy, but as well to develop peace through tourism. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. This is the end of our first day of the Asian Leadership Conference 2021. So thank you very much again, all to you. And I hope to see you again tomorrow. Thank you and goodbye.